welcome everybody to the Story Cafe. My name is Adriana McKenzie. I'm your host of Story Cafe, and I'm super excited to be here today. I have a very good friend of mine, Brian Braganza, here with me, and Brian and I have known each other for many, many, many years. We probably won't get into that today, but more than half my life, we'll say that. So say hi, Brian.
Hi, everybody. Nice to be here with you.
Excellent. So Brian and I have been talking a lot about transitions and letting go because we've both been kind of processing through a similar transition. And so in many moments this summer around the campfire or sitting at the beach, our conversations keep coming back to questions around, you know, like, when should you let go? Why is letting go so hard? How do you figure out what comes next in your life? So a lot about that, like, what's next? What should I be doing? So we've been having a lot of these conversations. And in those conversations, we thought, well, this would make a really fun podcast. We've been wanting to do a podcast together. So that's what today's podcast is all about. It's about navigating our path in life, figuring out how to leap across the river, when to take a different path. It'll probably be a little bit about fear, hopefully a lot about opportunity and leaps of faith. So please enjoy letting go. So Brian, thank you so much for, we're actually sitting in Brian's sauna building. Is that what you call the sauna building?
House.
So it's this little tiny attic. So it may end up being that you hear raindrops or mist on the roof. That's because that's where we are. And I thought, Brian, we could start with a question. So when you think about transitions and letting go, do you think there are situations or reasons that some things are easier to let go of than others?
Yeah, thanks, Adriana. I think, I guess there's like the level of attachment that I might have to a certain thing or a certain way of being or a certain relationship that makes it more difficult. And I think that that attachment is often, you know, connected somehow to my identity, like who I am in the world. And that right. if I let go of that thing or move away from that thing, does that mean I'm not that person that I once thought I was? And then I start to have questions around like, oh, have I been a fraud, right? Have I been putting on this identity? And then as I grow, it's like, oh, I'm not that thing anymore. I'm this other thing. Well, then was all that other thing a lie in my life, right? So like all these other, I don't know, emotional states show up as I'm letting go of one thing to reach on to another.
Yeah, it just made me think of imposter syndrome. Like we often get imposter syndrome in spaces, like new spaces, so new things. But it's true. We also get imposter syndrome kind of looking backwards at our own like experiences and like who we are. And maybe we weren't that person. We were just faking it till we could make it. So I don't know. For me, the things that are hardest are, I think like you said, like when they're attached to who I am as a person, they're really quite hard to let go of. Cause they almost like bring into question, who am I? And I feel like I don't always know who I am. Like it's this figuring out who you are is this lifelong journey. So if I don't know who I am, then how do I know what I'm supposed to be doing? Or how do I know where I should be going? And that's really challenging. So those are like things that I find really hard in that transition. It's funny because I'm trying to think back to my childhood and I think, was it easier when I was a kid to just let go of things? Was it harder when I was a kid? I think it's harder now.
Yeah, I was thinking about this when we were talking last night that like in my 20s, it was easy to let go of stuff. It was like my identity was about letting go of stuff, right? And moving on to the next thing and being like a free spirit and I could do what I wanted, right? And so it was like my identity was almost rooted in that. And then when I like moved to a more, you know, settled life and got married and those sort of things, it was like I was letting go of that identity of, you know, being more free spirited and being able to transition. And so for me, I think it was it was easier when I was younger.
Yeah, it's funny. It makes me think of, I remember getting to an age where I didn't want to go to bars anymore. but really like mourning the loss because I was still watching movies and seeing things that that's what young people do. And somehow like not wanting to do that and party and do those things meant I wasn't young anymore. And I also didn't like that. Like I still wanted to be young, but I didn't want to, I wanted to go to sleep at a reasonable hour. Like that's not, you know, unreasonable to want, but it's hard to make those life transitions. Cause then yeah, it's, I mean, we often joke about in the world about adulting, right? Which is like a big leap that you take from being a kid, being a teenager, and now you have to adult and have all these responsibilities. And that, I think we want that leap, but then when we get it, we're like, it's not as fun as I thought it was going to be.
Do you have, I have a question for you. Do you, how do the relationships in your life impact how you let go of something that's part of your identity?
Ooh, I think I turn to my really close people to help me navigate through it. Because it is really emotionally challenging because you're having to, I mean, I talk a lot on this podcast about reflection. You have to dig a little to let go of things, I think, because there's a reason you're holding on to it. And for me, it's hard to turn to my people for help at times. Like I don't always, like even you and I are really close and we've had conversations where it takes me a long time to get around to, I'm having a hard time. Can I share that with you? And usually, even when I do, I make jokes about it and I have a hard time kind of digging into it. But I do think those relationships, like my, at my stage in life now, those really close people help me be able to make those transitions and let go. Cause I think they give you a different perspective. Like your friends can see maybe some of the things that you can't see. I think the people in your life are the ones that say you're not an imposter, right? Or you are skilled. Like I'm making a job transition this year to a new school, new job, and I'm terrified. And it's my friends that keep telling me, you're going to be fine. You're going to do a good job. It's going to be okay. And I can't imagine what it would be like not having that. I don't know if that really answers your question, but.
Yeah, it, for sure. I think I was, yeah, I mean, I would agree with you. And I think it takes a lot of trust to have those conversations with certain relationships. I was also thinking about, I feel like there's some relationships in my experience that maybe aren't those trusted friends. They're not as close. And so they almost want to keep me in the old identity.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
That's how they know me. And so, you know, not actually allowing me to grow into the new, you know, the new stage or the new phase.
Yeah, that's an interesting, now I have to think on that. I definitely have had people in the past in my life who it felt like that for sure. I think I'm better at letting go of those people. I do find, it sounds terrible when I say it out loud, but I think I've done a lot of the work I need to do to let go of people who are adding to my life. And I think those transition moments are when you start to see that. You know, the person that just wants you to stay in that moment versus move on because they're stuck in that moment. Yeah. And they need to do their own work to get out of that moment. So I have gotten better at that. I am better at letting go of humans than I am feelings.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. I think letting go is scary. Like when I think about what is the thing that holds me back from moving on to something new. So when I left nonprofit, even moving to this new school, it's fear, right? Because it's unknown. What if I suck? What if I hate it? What if I make a bad decision?
Are there bad decisions?
Well, I mean, that's, are there bad decisions?
Everything leads us somewhere.
Yes.
Whether it's where we thought we'd be or not.
Yes.
And then whenever, wherever we end up, we have to like deal with that or face that or accept that thing.
No wrong decisions.
Maybe. I think there's unhealthy decisions.
Yeah. Yeah. I do. I find you have to put yourself in that frame of mind to think that. And I do agree with you though. Like there's just decisions.
Yeah.
There's just, if there's a path and there's three paths and you have to take one, they're all the right path?
I think so. Maybe. Hard to know. But I think of like, yeah, forks in the road, right? Like the road not traveled. And yeah. And there's many, you know, I've had many like decision points in my life. And when I look like some hard, like really hard decisions mm-hmm. and painful for me and, you know, another person, then I've made them. I don't regret like looking back. Like I wouldn't be who I am right now if I hadn't made the choices I made. I would be I would be somebody else. I would like probably other like awesome people in my life, but I wouldn't have met you necessarily, or, you know, I wouldn't have met Tara. And so it's like, whatever choices I made, here I am.
Yeah.
And this is, it's a good place.
I feel like have you ever heard the term radical acceptance?
Yeah.
I've been ruminating a lot on this term this year. This idea of just radically accepting, like being like whatever the situation is. And sometimes, a lot of times I think it's used to describe like negative things, like radically accept that this situation is shitty and it just is what it is. But I also think it applies to just radically accepting that there isn't a wrong path. There isn't a wrong answer. There's just steps we take to move forward. And yes, I like delineating from like unhealthy decisions and unhealthy choices, but I don't know. I went to St. Mary's University. I could have gone to Dalhousie University. I could have gone to the Mount. I don't think any of those would have been wrong decisions. They would have been lead me in different places. But there's a radical acceptance of just like being in the moment. And then my last podcast, someone commented afterwards about just being in the present and how important it is to just be in the present. And it's hard to do that. I think one of the things about letting go is we get stuck in the past, but we're also afraid of the future. So we're holding on to what's behind us and we're terrified of what's in front of us. And so we're not really just being in the moment of where we are because we're stuck in like a weird limbo of past and future.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. And even, I mean, even as we're talking now, I think there's stories that, I mean, I know I'm not that thing anymore. Like the whole, you know, for years doing outdoor and wilderness programming, you know, with teens and with like adult men. And it's still part of my story, right? Like, and it was so powerful, that work and being in the woods for like, you know, 5 days, 7 days with a group of people and like really closely connected to the co-facilitator and doing this work. And so, yeah, I have that story that formed me. It's not who I am anymore, right? Like I haven't done that work for 15 years. And yet it was such a powerful time in my life that there is a clinging to that part of my identity. I think that's just kind of arising right now as we're talking about how like there's still like, even though I know like intellectually I'm not that person, there's an emotional tie to that person.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I mean, that's partly how you and I met, right? And there's like, I know that had ripples in your life because you've told me that. And so there, like maybe because we still have a relationship and have a relationship with others, of, you know, that time in my life, that keeps it a little more present maybe in my emotional state.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm similar to you. Like I used to do canoe trips and things. There's a part of me that still wants to be that person.
Yeah.
Right. So like similar, like I don't do those things anymore. And they were transformational for me at the time. And I'll talk to my kids about them. But there's a little tiny part of me that when you were talking, I was like, but I still want to be that person. I want to be that person that packs up my kids and we go on canoe trips and we sleep in tents and we do the things. Or I want to be the person who takes students on canoe trips. And I'm trying to like map in my head why I still want to be that person. Like, what is it about that part of my story that I feel like I've lost that I still want? And I don't know if it's adventurer. Like I want this like label, this button that says Adriana the Adventurer, And I'm not, I don't want to let go of that because I want that to be who I am. But I do think that's part of like when we let go of those things, sometimes we end up letting go of parts of ourselves that we really like, mm-hmm. that we really want to hold on to. I could still go do a canoe trip.
Yeah.
I haven't in 15, 20 years. So, yeah, I don't know. I got to think about that a little bit.
Yeah, and I wonder, I mean, the work that I've done since, like, yeah, I mean, lots of moments of, you know, personal transformation for myself and the people I've worked with. And, you know, it hasn't been in the woods, hasn't been on a canoe trip, but there's still been, like, a lot of growth and development that's happened and a lot of excitement. And so it's not that I, like, became a completely different person, like, you know, working in a very, you know, I'm still facilitating, I'm still working with groups, still like making change that way. Yeah, but there's something about that identity that's...
If you were to define who you are, like your identity, so I was just thinking about me saying like, oh, I want to be Adriana the adventurer. Is adventurer part of an identity? How would you define... Like, what are the parts of, I mean, this is a giant question. It's a huge question.
Yeah. Yeah.
But maybe like a sampling of things. Because oftentimes we define our identity like, I'm a mother, I'm a teacher. But I think those are things we do. And I don't know, I don't have an answer to that. It's a question I have. It's like, are we the things we do? Or are we not the things we do? I know, it's like, you're looking at me like, oh my God, that's a huge question. Like, is adventure is a thing you do versus like maybe kind, thoughtful, caring, funny. I consider myself to be funny. I try to be funny. Humor is high on my list of things I think are important.
Yeah, I think for me, if we're looking at those things, like, you know, somebody who's like thoughtful, you know, reflective, can navigate really difficult things with like a certain amount of integrity.
Mm-hmm.
Those are, you know, that's how I want to be known. And I think people that know me that way.
Are you a facilitator?
That's going back to your other thought, like that's something I do. And yeah, it's part of my identity for sure. Yeah. It's something I do, but I hope I bring all those parts of myself into that.
Mm-hmm.
So that when I'm facilitating, there's an authenticity there, because that's also who I am. Rather than it's something I put on, it's like a wig I put on to go do my work. Right? It's part of who I am.
Yeah.
In my hanging out life and in my work life, I show up with consistency.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's part of the identity, but the facilitation is a role. It's a thing I do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think about, it's funny because I don't actually identify with being a teacher. Like I technically, on paper, I'm a teacher. I much more connect with the idea of facilitating. But I think for me, like for so long, my confidence rested on like what the things I did were. And I think shifting, like part of that letting go is like, well, you can be all those things, for example, and be an accountant. Not that you would want to be an accountant, but like you could be authentic and all those things that you just said and have facilitation skills and be an accountant.
Well, story is popping in my head.
Yeah, tell me.
Story tape. So I remember leaving a job where most of my work was facilitation. And, you know, even at that time, I was an executive director, but I was still facilitating the organization, right? And then I left that job. And I thought, what do I want to do with this part of my life? I'm like, I'm going to go be a carpenter. And I started working with another carpenter building a barn. And it was, you know, I did that for like a few months. And it was, yeah, I get up in the morning, get my tools, I go over to this site, and it's like, build this barn. And I got drawn back to facilitation because it was like, that was good, but it really wasn't who I am.
I don't know. I'm
not using that word rightly, but it was like, it's part of who I am, but it wasn't fulfilling me in the same way as when I'm working with people, when I'm facilitating a process, when I'm like, that's fulfilling for me, when I'm seeing that kind of change.
So that was like,
there's like a realization there. Cause I was kind of burned out when I left that job. And it's like, I'm done with like being with people. I just need to like build stuff. And although that, you know, there's value in that, I saw myself like, and even had this conscious thought, it's like, well, I'm getting drawn back to being with people and facilitating. And that's curious. Like, that was interesting for me to see that, you know, trying to let go of the facilitation, but then it pulled me back in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. I find myself I left nonprofit, like leadership roles in nonprofit. And the parts of those roles that I always loved were like the change making parts. Like, oh, something's not working. How do we fix it? How do we change it? And I love that kind of problem solving side of things. I think it's what I like about facilitation is like you're constantly doing that. So you're coming up with a plan and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but you're always thinking on your feet. And I needed a break from that similar. And I found myself, I walked away from nonprofit. I'm like, I'm going to teach. I'm going to be in a classroom. I'm going to have this little tiny like, you know, thing I do. And I found myself pulled back into like bigger system, like, well, how do we fix that? Or like, what's not working about that? Because maybe as much as I love the problem solving spaces, it's that I also really, really hate when something isn't working and we just accept that it's not working. And it's hard to be in the world when you think like that. It's exhausting. So it's like both of those things, but that makes a lot of sense because I've similarly found myself being pulled back into, and I have mixed feelings about that because I'm like trying to separate myself from it. And yet here it is. So maybe we are both our qualities and what we do with the qualities.
I'm curious about that pull. Can you speak more about like what is the pull into thinking more systemically or the bigger changes that you want to see?
I feel like it's a magnet, like I'm just drawn to it. I feel like similar to like you saying, getting pulled back into those relationships of those, like, I just can't, like, I'm trying to think of a simple example that's like when you walk by a cupboard and it's slightly ajar.
Yeah.
And some people can just walk by it and never close it.
They don't even see it.
Yeah. Yeah. And some people have to close it. That for me is like when I see things, especially things that in my mind are fixable. And maybe fixing isn't the right word, but like you could do something about that. You could make a change. You could try some things. And I'm never ever attached to whether it'll 100% work or not, but just watching and doing nothing. And some things I have to actually practice that. It's actually not good for me to constantly be pulled into fix, 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 fix. Sometimes you just have to witness that this is not working and it's actually not your job to fix it. But it's like closing the cupboard. Like I just can't not, I can actually walk by cupboards and leave them open. But as a metaphor, when things don't work, kids are not engaging, I'm always like, well, what do we do about that? We can't just do nothing about that. There are things to be done about that. And I get pulled into that.
And you have ideas and thoughts on what can be done.
Sometimes I do. Sometimes I just have questions. You know, sometimes I just want to sit in a room. It's something I really miss. So this is something I've had a hard time letting go of. So you and I used to work together. And and some other folks that we still have relationships. We often joke about like this moment in time where we were with really great people. And I learned a lot about how to brainstorm and how to be in like an idea generation space during my time working with you and those folks. And I love brainstorming. And I am very unattached to the outcome of the brainstorm. I wasn't always like that. I actually remember being in a meeting once with two colleagues, and we were trying to talk through something. And I was like really defensive and really resistant and was like, I just couldn't be in that space. But that stuck with me. Someone in that meeting kind of like gently nudged me, and I was like in a mood, and there were lots of factors that led to it, but it stuck with me because I remember thinking, I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be the person that just can't hear other people's ideas because I'm in a bad mood. I don't want to be a person who can't be open to different things. And so I've been through lots of trainings where, you know, I've learned different tools for brainstorming, but I love the idea of idea generation. And what I've come to realize is idea generation is really hard for people because they become really attached to their idea. And so when you and I are working together, I'll often say, I'm just throwing spaghetti at the wall, which is like, it's not even like the right metaphor. I just love it. And so I always use it. And for me, what I'm trying to communicate to you is like, I'm not attached to this. If it falls off the wall, I don't care. But we get really attached to our ideas and we have a hard time. If I'm holding on to this idea because my idea represents me being smart or me being skilled or me being whatever the thing is.
Or being seen.
If I let go of this, then I'm not those things. If I hold on to it and then we pick my idea, then I was right. I was smart. You know, like all those things we attach to this idea. I actually really love the act of letting go of those things. Because I was once at a conference where they talked about, I've never been able to describe this properly, so I'm very sorry to the listeners if it doesn't make any sense. But this idea of the third, where the best ideas, like when we brainstorm, the kind of first ideas we throw out there are never the best, but they lead us to think about the second layer of ideas. And if we dig into those and build on those, we can get to the third layer, which is always the best set of ideas. The most innovation is there. I love that idea. And it really struck me as, I don't know, it just made a lot of sense to me. And I rarely ever in spaces where people can brainstorm that way, which is a bit of a tangent, but also connected in that, like, we hold on to things, right? Like that simple idea in a brainstorm. Who cares if my idea is right or not?
I think being able to see that, like, whatever idea is put out there is helping to build a new idea.
Yeah.
So it still has value. You know, it may not be the one idea that we choose, but it influenced where we ended up and whatever we landed on. And so being able to see that, like, the bigger picture of that, all of us in this room right now throwing out ideas is helping to create something new.
Yeah. And it's a collaborative process. Yeah. It's not a me process. And I still, despite loving being in like those processes, I still have moments where I find myself, like I have the feelings associated with like, but there goes my idea, especially in a big group of people that I don't have a big trusting relationship with. It shifts when I'm with people I really trust, right? Because I trust in all of our ability to find. But it's interesting because I think it's the same in life, right? The path, like what's the right path? And we hold on to like this idea of finding the right path because it represents me being smart or healthy or whatever the, you know, voices in your head are telling you, you need to be confident versus what if I choose this thing over here and if I fail over here, then I am not all these things that I really want to be. Like it almost explodes your identity. Like if your identity is a puzzle that you've put together, there's this fear, what if it blows up and now it's an individual pieces and you have to put it back together.
I applied for a job this year. I've been self-employed for 16 years, and I applied for a job in February, and like I brought all my people around, like you're describing, right? Like I'd like to have this conversation. You know, you were part of that, and Tart was part of that, and other friends, and it's like this is not who I am anymore. Like working at an organization, but I'm going to do this thing because it felt like a really good fit. But it meant letting go of like that facilitator, self-employed identity for 16 years, right? And so I took the leap of faith and it's like, I'm just going to do this thing. And I did it really well. And I worked really hard on you know, I actually hired somebody to create a short video. I did a, prepared for the interview with a friend who's an employment counselor, and you know, with my references, like I conversated with them. I, you know, did all the things right that I thought I should do. I didn't get the job. I was apparently like really close, but I ended up not getting it. I think I had like probably 2 weeks of like, maybe a week, maybe not that long. I don't know. It was like a week and a half, but of like, oh, you know, moaning, right? And why didn't I get the job? And I should have gotten that job. And the organization didn't see the right person. You know, all these story things that came up. And now, like a month and a half later, I'm so glad I didn't get that job.
it's true.
And it's like, it's that thing around there's no wrong decision, right? Like I made a decision. I did that thing.
Yep.
It unfolded. And here I am, and I'm fine, right? Like I'm okay, and we're all okay, and there's now new opportunities opening up. Actually, the week after I didn't get the job, this new opportunity opened up for me around writing.
Right.
That was so exciting, and it's like,
you know, things also
manifest, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I feel like the intention I put into crafting a good resume and, you know, rebuilding my confidence
helped with the next opportunity.
Yeah.
So it wasn't wasted time. It wasn't lost time. It was just what I really needed to do at that time. And here I am. And it's
going to be okay.
I went to St. Mary's. My undergrad is in criminology, and I got 2 years into it. And I enjoyed it, but after 2 years, I was like, this is not going to, where is this even going to lead me? And so I applied and I got into the rec therapy program at Dow. And I was already doing work. Like I was already doing canoe trips. I was already doing all kinds of rec stuff that was borderline therapeutic. And so I thought, well, I'll go get this degree. And then I have the degree to match the thing that I'm doing. And I went there for a year. And I hated it. And I think I hated it because it felt like I was just ticking a box, because a lot of the stuff I was learning about, I already knew. I was literally, that was my job to do things like this. And so I quit and I went back to St. Mary's. And even though St. Mary's didn't necessarily like, I mean, what do you even do with a criminology degree? I don't know. It's an undergrad, I guess. But I was learning stuff that was fascinating to me. And so I went back and I finished that. And so if you look at it in one way, I wasted a year and $6,000 on a program I didn't finish. Or I tried something out and realized it wasn't for me. Otherwise, I might have always wondered. And realized that I needed to go back to this other program and finish that. So it is interesting how we attach our decisions to like pass or failing or right or wrong versus just I did a thing and then it didn't work out. And I mean, if you had gotten that job, that would have been okay too.
It would have been okay.
Yeah.
I would have invested in that. And yeah. I would have been here sitting with you and it'd be fine.
Yeah.
Actually, no, because it'd be Monday morning. I'd have to.
You'd be at work. Are we doing this podcast all by myself? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's what's really complicated about letting go and moving like through the world and different on these different paths that we have or these side things that we do is there's so much emotion we attach to it, and it's hard to get to a place where you're, because you don't want to be unattached. Like, I don't think that's the goal.
Yeah.
You want to invest. You want to care about doing things well or authentically, but you also need to figure out when to, I don't know, figuring out when to let things go. Whether it's an emotion, like letting go of anger, like when to just stop being angry at someone because it's like, it's done, it's over. I say that to my kids all the time. You got to let it go. We were just talking about siblings, like brother and sister constantly picking at each other. I'm constantly saying to them, just let it go, let it go, let it go. And they're just like, no.
Yeah.
I will not let it go. He poked me.
Well, and they're figuring out how to be in the world. Like, that sibling relationship is helping navigate, like, another relationship in their life, right? Like, they, like, it's, I think it's a really, it's part of how they learn.
And figuring out what matters. I think when I'm always saying to them, letting go, it's because for me, on the outside, looking at whatever they're bickering about, it, for me, it doesn't matter. But for them, it matters, right? So whoever is on, like, you know, when I say to them, just let it go, it doesn't matter. For them, it's like, no, being right in this moment matters to me. And my perspective, having been on the planet longer, is different than their perspective because they're just figuring that out. But there is, like, I'm, as I say it, I'm realizing, oh, I need to be more aware of, like, they do have feelings attached to, like, this thing that they're in. And yes, they need to practice, like, letting things go that don't matter because they take up too much space in your life. I think of the amount of times I've gone home after a negative interaction with someone, and then you spin on it at home, and then you lay in bed thinking about all the things you wish you had said, or like the next time that person does that really unique thing, I'm gonna have a response. And the next time never happens, and I will literally say to myself, let it go. You need to let it go. This doesn't matter. You need to let it go. But it does matter to me in the moment.
Yeah. And I think there's, like, we're whole beings, right? So our emotional selves and our, you know, the stewing or the, you know, spinning on something, like that's part of who we are. And there's, yeah, what are the practices that you do to help you to let it go or to move through that, right?
Well, what's the risk if you don't? Like, if you don't let things go, whether it's like if you were still stewing on that job or just like a negative interaction with someone.
Yeah.
What happens when you don't let things go?
Yeah, I think there's a toll it takes on your emotional, physical body of not being able to move forward to something else, or to be able to see the wisdom in that interaction, or to be able to see the, you know, our own humility in that moment and our own stuckness in that moment, right? To be able to, like, reflect back and see, oh, this is how that could have gone differently, or, you know, I didn't say the right thing in the moment because of my own past trauma or stories around those kind of confrontations, and so I was keeping myself safe.
Mm-hmm.
With the right thing to do, you know. And so I think taking moments to reflect on that experience helps us then move through, rather than getting stuck or spinning on the negativity of that experience.
Yeah, I think, I mean, if I think about moments in time where, like, I've had to let, like, when I've waited too long to let something go, it's usually because I've come to realize, like, the stewing on that is consuming me. And it's, I think it's the same when we make decisions. Like, that idea, what you said, is there a wrong decision? Like, if you get fixated on, like, making the right decision, it becomes all consuming. And then you miss, like, I feel like there's a quote or something that is, like, it's about the process, it's about the journey, it's not, which is kind of cliche, but so many cliches are just accurate, and that's why they're frustrating. But it's, you know, if you're just over focused on, like, the end, then you never really appreciate the moment you're in, which comes back to being present, but just the journey that you're on to get there. And early on, I think maybe my very first podcast, I talked about just physical activity and, like, doing these events and how I always, like, hate them because I'm just over focused on, like, my negative feelings. One of the things I've been practicing when I'm out running or biking is, like, just smiling and making myself happy in the moment. And I'm like, and so I put this, like, weird, awkward smile on my face to, like, make it feel even better. Even, like, the other day I was on a bike ride and I got chased by a dog. And, like, once I realized the dog wasn't aggressive, I was like, it's fine. It's just a dog. And I told it to go home, and I think it listened. But, like, we have this choice to make in these moments. You were telling me earlier about this trapeze thing. Do you want to, can we come back to that?
Yeah, let's go there.
We get stuck, and this is what made me think of the trapeze thing, but like we get stuck between looking backwards and looking forwards, and we forget everything that's in the middle. And you were sharing earlier about, it's like a reading, you read something about?
Yeah, so our friend, mutual friend Kathleen actually gave me this years ago. So Dane and Perry is the author of this piece, and it talks about, I mean, it's very poetic language, but it talks about how we cling to the bar we're on, or we're swinging on a bar, and life is good, right? Like, this is our bar of the moment, and it's great, and or it's not great, but we're on it anyway, and that's the thing. And then in the distance, we see another bar and realize that our name's written on that, and that's the next bar for us. And so there's a moment of pause there around, like, looking into the void, and it's like, to get that next bar, I got to let go of bar one and swing across this, like, chasm, this void, before I can actually get the next bar. And what if I miss? And then I'll plummet, you know? And so it's this story about the letting go of one bar to get the next trapeze bar. And where it lands is that part of what's important in that story is the movement across the space in between the bars, and that our culture often, you know, defines that as a nothing space or a no space or a in-between space, but there's actually something happening in that space that's important for us to go through before we connect to that next bar. And so it's not just, life is not just about being on the bars, but it's also about that in-between space, the letting go of one before we connect to another, and the transition, the void, you know, whatever we want to call that. But it's that, that's as important as the times that we're on a thing, on a bar, doing the thing that we're supposed to be doing. Or
so I think it validates the transition space, and which I feel like that's what we're talking about a lot this morning, is around that, you know, how do we let go of one thing to another? What helps us? What supports us? What do we do as we're moving through the space?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't read it for years, and then I pulled it out again a couple of weeks ago, and it's like, oh, this is really good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I need this, you know, maybe that's what's helping in the space that I'm in right now, which is a bit of a transition where I've, you know, with between whether it's around work or around, you know, family health, you know, mm-hmm. we're going through some things like that, or around,
yeah, just the various things I'm navigating my life right now.
Yeah. And it's a scare, like that void is scary, right? For there's sure. possibility to be hurt in that void. There's a possibility that you won't make the bar. Bar won't reach far enough. You won't reach far enough. Someone might steal the bar. And I do think we avoid scary places. Although I feel now in my life that I have more people around me that I really trust and feel like I can be myself around, I feel more able to be in those scary spaces. Like, it feels less lonely to be in those scary spaces. But I imagine for a lot of people, you know, I imagine people like switching jobs. It's really scary to make that leap, because like there's the whole thing about, this is what you know, even if you're not happy there anymore, it's not working for you anymore, or you're not making enough money there, you know it. It's predictable. We like predictable. And there's a leap of like accepting that the next little bit's going to be scary, it's going to be uncomfortable. A lot of the work we used to do actually is actually putting people in those places of like, we're going to be uncomfortable for a few minutes and just sit in that. And then we're going to come out and be okay. So there is a practicing of, I wonder if trapeze artists really do still get scared every time they let go of a bar. Imagine they did the first time.
Yeah. I mean, I think my example is like, yeah, I don't know the answer to the question. I guess it would depend on the person. But my example is like when I'm in front of a group facilitating, like I always have a certain amount of fear mm-hmm. that shows up. And
I'm kind of grateful for that fear, because I think it
keeps me
like humble,
because if I just knew, if it just like, if I always went in there with like a whole lot of confidence that, oh, I'm just going to do this thing, it's going to be okay, then I don't think I would be
on my edge. and I wouldn't
be in a learning place, and I would be in kind of more of a, I would just be doing the thing that I know how to do.
And so I think that the fear actually helps
be present in the moment. And so I know for the trapeze swingers, maybe they have some level of fear.
I don't know that anybody completely overcomes like all their fears. Mm-hmm. Right? So maybe it's not a fear of falling, but maybe it's a fear of something else that's showing up in that moment.
So I don't know. I'm not a trapeze swinger.
That's true. Neither am I. Yeah, it's interesting because the way you just described fear made me think of, and I think I've talked about this a bit in the Risk podcast, but just about that embracing a certain amount of fear anyway. It's funny how like just in all the podcasts I do, there are just key things that come up over and over. So risk taking comes up over and over, and letting go is a big risk. Fear comes up over and over, and how you like navigate your own fear. And on one hand, like keep your, like allow the fear to keep you safe. And on the other hand, don't allow the fear to hold you back. So like risk, fear, reflection comes up over and over. So it's, there are just these like core human experiences, I think, that turn up in our lives in different ways all the time. And the process is kind of similar. Like, how do you figure out letting go? Think a bit about it. Talk to your people about it.
Try some things.
Maybe write some lists.
Yeah.
Some people like to pro and con it. I've done that. Even in like the Perfectionist podcast, that idea of like fear of judgment. So like that judgment comes up over and over in podcasts. Like that human experience that we have is so, it's so consistently weaved through all of our different and unique experiences. And yet I think we all have it. Like it's, I think we live in a world sometimes where we feel lonely in it. Like we're not, we're so unique that no one else experiences this thing, but we're all experiencing those things over and over in our lives.
Yeah, I want to zoom out for a minute, and that I think what you're describing, I feel like there's excessive amount of that in this culture, like in our kind of Western dominant society. I wonder how it might be different. And partly why I think that is because we're very disconnected from each other in a community sense, or in like, we're just like a lonely culture,
right? Yeah.
And so how is that different? You know, the fear, the reflection, the judgment, how is that different in another culture in our world, or in indigenous cultures, or in, you know, racialized cultures? That, how's that different?
Right? Yeah.
And I think that's important to, so those, you know, universal themes that you're naming, I think they are relevant in our society, and they may be less relevant in another.
I'd be interesting to know what are the consistent experiences? If you like, could you find consistent human experiences in all cultures? So,
yeah.
How do we tie it all together? We need to tie it all up, Brian.
Oh, yeah. We need to, maybe we just let this,
let it go.
Just trust in that we've talked about what we need to talk about, and that the listeners will take from it what they feel is most important.
I think for me, what I'll take from it, I always take things in these conversations, and even when I like do them by myself, I always walk away thinking about my own choices. But like moving into this new job, I think like just showing up as me and letting go of all the other stuff, and letting go of like who I was in all the other jobs, and know that I'm who I am. Those personality traits, those come with me. They're a package deal. So I think that just letting go of like the vision of who I think I should be, and just being in the moment and being present with who I am, and trusting that I will show up as me, and that in the past that has worked. And in theory, in the future, it will work.
Well, and that's something that's helped you get across the void, right? Yeah. Like the trusting in you.
Yeah.
And the, you know, you will show up as you.
Yep.
And that's all you can do, really. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like what's resonating for me is the piece around like there's no wrong decision. Mm-hmm. And especially as I look, you know, forward at some decision points in, you know, my life right now. And it's like, as long as I'm showing up as me, showing up, you know, with my, you know, fully being present to the moment, they might be hard decisions, but they're not the wrong decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Bye for now.